Early, isn't it?
Yeah, which episode are we on? 15.
15, eight.
Hello everyone, and welcome to The Fern, episode 15.
Good morning.
Yeah, me and Alex have had a conflicting schedule, family stuff, tournament. I've been at home eating Dorito, and we're recording this at the Glory about 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah, just after work for you and just before work for me.
Yeah, I finish work about 2 a.m.
Yeah.
But surprisingly, I'm on that kind of hysteria energy. Can only get about 5:30 in the morning. But where to begin? It's not happening this week.
Yeah, we haven't played a game, which we normally do. We normally sort of get like amped up by like playing a game before going into it. But some pretty exciting stuff come out. Something that I've noticed not many people talk about, but I'm really excited about, is the new Big League. It's one of the things I wanted to do since I started playing. It's like the closest thing to almost like a narrative campaign.
Yeah,
you know?
Just announced it on the blog, haven't they?
Yeah.
A new, fresh Big League.
That's it. So like there's no reason that you can't run like a little like serious tournament, but like when I'm at the game club, sometimes I just want a nice decompressed game. But I still want to play Guild Ball, and the Rookie League is a really nice idea, but I've found it quite hard to try and explain to completely new players what it is.
Yeah, I've not been able to warm up to the Rookie League rules. I really liked the idea. The thing that I would have liked more, if the rookie cards, well, I know they've got the whole thing, you know, you level them up or whatever.
Yeah.
I kind of wish the rookies were, you know, legit models.
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah.
You know, it just make it hard to really get, didn't it? Like, yeah, okay. It basically feels like if I'm using the rookie rule, I'm having a non-game of Guild Ball, effectively.
Yeah. My issue with it is that it's just another layer of complication. Because, I mean, I can see where a club that's different to us in that already has a thriving Guild Ball player base could really just get on with it, could really, really enjoy it. But we're in this place where we've got a few experienced players and we've got a few brand new players who are starting to come into it. And it does feel like just an unnecessary level of complication to say, as long as you have a captain and mascot, you can have any four other models, except when we're playing this, then you have to have this one model because this is the team you're playing. Okay, these are the 10 cards you have. You need to start with this and this, but make sure you pick the right side. You know, it's
It's time to duel. I think that's like an inherent irony in that, and the really experienced players will come to that really quickly, but new players, like, is rookie meant for new players?
See, that I don't know. I think it's more of like an organised play format for I think it's been targeted at sort of existing players to sort of give you a bit of an alternate format, which is the exact thing I was saying, you know, like when I go down on a Monday night, sometimes I just want a bit more of a chilled game of Guild Ball. So I think that's what it's for.
If I'm going to sit down for a game of Guild Ball, I don't get to sit down for it that often.
Yeah,
I'm going to want to play, you know, a legit game, effectively. Yeah. I don't wonder if the rookie cards were, you know, legit tournament cards and they had their own unique rule, I don't know what the rule would be. Maybe they start out really shit, but they get better as turn goes on. You know, turn one they're a rookie, turn two they're...
Oh, right. Well, that'd be interesting.
But, or, you know, they had a unique rule that made them, you know, whatever. Maybe like a Rankings 1 BP shit where you took a slightly shitter version
of the rule.
But, or maybe you could choose between the different cards. I don't know. I don't know how I'd make it work. It's not really for me. I think that's the problem. I really like the model. I think almost all the rookie models I actually quite like.
Yeah.
I've not seen a sculpt. I've gone, meh.
I think I've been quite tempted just to pick up that Jack as the alternate Jack sculpt.
Jack is pretty crazy.
Yeah, and the Zerola in particular.
Yeah.
So I love that model.
Underlying Zerola, fucking hell. Mainly because I don't want to put the original in.
Don't want to try and get their arm together.
Yeah, God.
Yeah, but so one of the reasons I'd like to run it is, like I said, it's just a bit, it's a game of Guild Ball with almost less stakes. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's sort of like nice at the club. You've got those objectives that you're trying to get, like score a snapshot with a mascot and stuff, and then weird little janky plot cards that you get.
Yeah,
that'd be really nice. I'm looking forward to running that in the future when season 4 drops.
The first exploration league we went to, we had all the agenda cards shit. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what you got for completing agenda, but I thought that was looking a neat little... I actually quite liked that general format rule. Just to give you a little something extra. I like to say it got me thinking about the game, you know, in a slightly different way. I quite liked that. But all the new shits are gone. Moving on.
Yeah.
Big leagues. That looks fun. anyway.
Yeah. One, I'll tell you what, there's one thing when it dropped, I thought straight away of you, was the new organised play update to allow you to play with apps.
Oh, yeah.
Well, app. GB Manager.
I'm familiar with GB Manager. And, right. I'll put my coffee down for this one. I get GB Manager, right? He's got the feature, he can connect to people. That being said, I use GB Keeper.
Yeah.
I really prefer GB Keeper, flat out. Like, GB Manager has a couple of features I think are really cool. Like, they've got a map feature where you put yourself on the map and you can find other local players. Great idea. Brilliant. Again, they'd be able to connect over local internet and, you know, share information. Great idea. Love it. That being said, I really, really like GB Keeper. Just flat out. I know it's not feature rich or whatever. It looks beautiful. I know it shouldn't matter, but it does.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I don't like about this. If GB Manager becomes the official app, quote unquote, I hope that doesn't hurt people who use other apps. If people go, oh, I use GB Manager for XYZ reason,
yeah,
I turn around and go, well, yeah, but I prefer GB Keeper.
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't turn around and go, well, you got to use GB Manager because that's OPD.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
because of the, you know, connectivity feature.
Mm.
Oh, you go, oh, great, you know, you can share with me. And I get why, really useful, but
that sharing information, I at the moment use cards and a pen, but the fact that you can share information is actually starting to convince me that
I get that it's super useful,
yeah,
but I prefer GB Keeper, yeah, and I don't want it being official, like going, you can't use that now because it'll be defense.
I think it'll be it's same as before. If you want to use it, you use it, but then if your opponent is that guy, they can ask you to either use GB Keeper will get your cards out.
I make the same argument, like going, oh, it's hard to share information. Well, for me, just hard to share information with.
Yeah, we had this discussion, didn't we, in a in like a locals chat where people were saying, well, you know, it's really easy to like not pass or to like take less damage off and stuff when you're using an app, and I'm like, I'm sorry, but I don't think that's got anything to do with it. I think if someone's secret tech is they're cheating, then like they will find a way to cheat regardless. It doesn't matter whether you're using an app or a card.
Yeah, again, everyone uses marker usually on the card.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, how shit hot are you on that? You literally count along with them. Like, if they really want to get a cheeky rub out while you're distracted with
them. Yeah.
It could happen with anyone.
Which is one of the reasons why I might actually start using the app. This app. I like the idea of being able to scroll down and sort of not having to, like, sort of not then going, oh, what's this guy's, how much health's this guy left on? How much health's this guy left on? Not telegraphing what you're thinking, almost, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are a lot of, I do prefer apps generally. My favourite thing about the app, I don't know if GB Manager does this, I'll have to double check, but okay, one of my favourite things about GB Keeper, if you have your team, if you bring cards up on your library, it saves them separately. So it's not that hard to check the other team quickly and go back to your team, and you don't have to fumble around.
Oh, it's, you can, when you set it up.
Or you can add an enemy team feature.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's literally on the same scroll page, which is quite cool. Yeah,
I don't dislike Manager. I just really prefer GB Keeper.
Yeah.
And I won't lie, mainly because I think the app looks nicer. I know it's not it's a contentless argument to make,
yeah,
but I prefer the way it looks. And the guy just shit hot on the card.
Well, the navigators are already up on GB Manager.
Maybe I have a bit of fan loyalty. I guess another thing I'm worried about as well, that if GB Manager is made official, how much will that hurt all the other apps? You know, for all these people who put time into, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a difficult one because, like you say, like a lot of people are putting time into this. You know, no one's getting paid for it, are they? These people who are doing it. So there's this idea of like they're investing all this time and effort, and then I guess someone has to be the lucky one. You know. Like if it's going to happen, and if an app is going to get picked up, then it had to be one person. It's just it's unfortunate that it couldn't be like any app that has multiplayer connectivity, if as long as you and your opponent can agree which one to use. But then that leaves it open to people then not agreeing on one. So that's why they've got to just sort of put the foot down and pick one, isn't it? But I mean, like if. The most hotly contested event we went to, the event that was most competitive, GB Nats, you used an app the entire time and no one had a problem with it.
No.
So like I don't see anyone having a problem with it now, like you say.
I prefer app. It's fucking better.
I forgot you didn't even have it.
I'm not even, if you weren't willing to get into argument from, I think having an app is better.
And there you go. Problem solved. Yeah, you've got it on now.
Yeah. It's not the app I want though. Do you think going here, please? Like,
Oh, Ryan wants to be able to use an app. All right, then we'll sort that out for him. Motherfucker, he's not happy.
You'd be fucking great, wouldn't it? Dean Fogg's looking to make him gone. You know what? He's got a point. This is for Ryan, fucking GV manager. Can't wait to hear about him.
But I wonder what he says.
No, fuck him. No, fuck him.
Whoa, why can't I have the one I wrote?
I view this OPD as a declaration of war. fucking hell. No, but I think it's good. I think I'm glad they've kind of, though, of going app is legit, basically. Because, I don't like app. Pain in the ass.
One thing I do like, though, in sort of taking a bit of a sidestep now, is that, as a general rule, Steamforged really sort of... It seems like they really appreciate things that the community have created. Like Longshanks, for example, you know, it isn't a Steamforged product, you know. It's got the Steamforged art slapped all over it. It's got logos. It's got the picture of the captains all over it.
Yeah.
And, like, it would be so easy for... I'm going to take the low-hanging fruit here. Like, you can imagine that if someone did that for an EA game or something, like, in the video game world, that it would be pulled down straight away, you know. It's the sort of thing that I can imagine Disney having a problem with. But these guys have just gone, you know, there's someone out there who's created this really good resource that loads of people use. You know, I don't think I've been to a tournament that hasn't used the Longshanks. You know, everyone talks about Longshanks ratings, which I know we've discussed, but I think it's fundamentally in the system.
I really love Longshanks.
Yeah, it's the best way to do it. That algorithm, and instead of going right, well, fuck you very much. I think a lot of the Steamforge guys have actually donated to it. They're supporting it.
Yeah.
And then again with this app, like someone's unfortunately, it's not like with the Longshanks there was like 12 people doing it, you know. There was only that and the Black Orifice, but I won't pretend to know what happened there. And then because it was just as I started playing that people were talking about the Black Orifice, and suddenly everyone was talking about Longshanks.
Yeah.
But with the app, I suppose someone had to get picked up.
Well, Longshanks learn things where a community-driven set of rules basically has become effectively the standard.
Yeah.
Like I basically view a tournament legitimacy by position on Longshanks. If I turn up to a tournament and go, "Oh yeah, we're doing this, but it's not Longshanks legal," I'm like going, "Well, what are you doing that?"
Yeah. The what are you doing? Yeah. Why isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I go like, exactly. Okay, what magic rules are you imposing to make it not Longshanks? Yeah.
The only thing is, I've never tried to run an event on there, so I can't say if it lets you do it or not. But one thing I would like to do is be able to do like 4-person tournament round robins.
Yeah,
you know, where everyone plays everyone. You'll get 3 games, so it's like a four people event would go to 3 rounds. But I don't know how that would work because I know that I think it's done on strength schedule and seedings and stuff.
Yeah, I've been having a couple of musings about potential round robin, and it's another project for the future. I'll get into it more today. Get more to it in a minute. But the idea of having I don't know how to put it, contest that, I don't know. I don't hugely love the way tournaments go at the minute, but there's no other way because of the volume of players. Having a round robin invitational would be awesome.
Yeah.
But man, fucking, well, we got OPD, Longshanks,
Navigators.
Oh yeah, folks, speaking of the new Hunter, bloody hell, Navigator.
Those splashy boys.
Oh yeah. Everyone, you've seen them on the Facebook, you've seen them on the forum. Windfinder, bloody mascot, fucking Ebb Scout.
You look really defeated. What's wrong?
Right. I know a big part of Guild Ball's new team release, in the whole. Basically, every time you get a new team, it's effectively almost the core of a new team design. It's how do these guys fuck with rules? They're almost feeling a bit too much of the fuck with rules. Right, first off, maybe we'll probably have to have a dedicated navigating episode at some point. But my initial impression coming in, man, Fucking Ebb for a start. Fucking maximum of 2 damage. That is just a flat out influence tap.
Yeah.
The team I currently run, I get 10 influence. If I want to kill this dude optimally, even I get the damage I want every time, which isn't guaranteed, I need to blow up influence minimum off 5 and get a condition.
Yeah, so which one of your models can do that?
Feren.
Yep.
But, or, you know, taking turns from the model. But I can at least, I can put conditions up. I can force the, you know, clear condition or clear health.
Yeah.
I can make it more of an investment for you. But like, okay, now it makes other shit more potent. Ebb, you heal him, you bought 2 influence worth of attack for him.
Yeah.
Like, healing 4 on what model, depending on the model, isn't guaranteed to earn you back that 1-for-1.
Yeah.
You literally calculate it, like, you know, it's a mathematical equation at that point. I heal 4, I get 2 influence back. Minimum.
Yeah.
Even if they get a killer rat, you know, momentum 8, momentum 5, yeah, followed on the rat, and like 2 damage. Okay, I'll do momentum 1 twice.
You get a barrel of crowd outs, you get some attack buff, you get the singled out from the game plan deck.
Yeah.
Sledge charges in, he hits the 7, he wraps, he hits the 7 yeah. again.
Charge, full so, fucking yeah, yeah, yeah. everything, sledge, pile drop. Yeah,
into a knockdown there, yeah. 7, wrap to the playbook again. 7 again. Doesn't matter, that's 2 damage.
I don't feel like rap should cancel that rule out.
Just, do you think it's like 2 per
maximum
playbook?
2 per playbook.
Yeah.
But at least if you got a rap, you attack an extra 1 on there, do you know what I mean? But yeah, that's just a flat out influence attack. Then yeah, okay, you've got Horizon, who fucks with the VP situation.
Yeah.
And it's not like for Horizon is a nothing model. He can actually, it's not like, if you turn around and you go, oh, I get a goal with Horizon. You want, like, who better to get a goal with? Horizon or Fina? You know, it's not, you go, well, Horizon actually got good kick, good movement. It's fucking very, very doable. Yeah, the fact he fucked with the VP calculation. Then you've got Agma. Man, for what? I charge in on it, right? The knobhead. Alright, 1 momentum, counter attack.
That's a free defensive stance.
Oh no, sorry. 1 momentum defensive. Sorry, I forgot to get getting poised on it. Yeah, okay. I get the defensive. I get the free counter attack. Okay, because counter attack, you get an extra defense.
Oh. Shit, has he got poised as well?
Yeah, free or charge, motherfucker. So for that counter attack, he's getting extra defense. If you're defensive, that's on 6 defense already. The guy is not fucking
crazy, yeah.
That's what I mean. Fucking.
So for one momentum, you can take that free poise and flip up the defensive stance. Good.
Yeah,
6
and 8. Then he gets fucking good shit on the counter attack.
Netted. I love the idea of using that.
Yeah. Yeah, just giving someone a knockdown condition. But more importantly, shit like disarm.
Yeah.
You get disarm super reliably. Because in counterattack, you're not getting momentum anyway. So almost always, you go bang, disarm, dodge, why not? Or you know, if you get lucky and you get the double push depending on the character, that could completely fuck with the day.
Yeah.
But yeah, even just the charm, if I go in with J-Car, I'm like, yeah, for some fucking crazy reason, I don't, you know, let's just kind of don't charge. You've got a 7-inch jog, why not? Just jog base to base. 1 swing, okay, free counter attack. Like, alright, fuck, I do my damage. Do my best, gut and string or whatever. He turns around, alright, bing bang bosh, the charm. And he's gonna get it. Got a 6 attack, he can get a 3 roll. He's gonna fucking get that, the charm. Bang, fucking, that just knocked out my damage. That just literally kicked the stool out from underneath me.
Yeah.
That ability to just circumvent a lot of what are normally very good things. He is the only guy who can potentially do damage. But you got Windrider who can set him up as well. Knock down, Ice Bite for 3. You should go for the one Ice Bite. If you knock him down, machine can base to base, like here. They're knocked down, now they've got Ice Bite. And you know what I love about condition? If you've got to knock down into the perfect condition, you've got to heal it and therefore give up your healing potential. For me, that's almost the reason you put condition from someone. Not to even have a condition, most of the condition can't have that damaging. Like poison, I can kind of deal with poison, I'll just out heal it. Bleed, negligible. But no, it's why I said to you, when I first started playing Hunter, I almost felt like stacking a shitload of condition from someone felt like a trap because it made it obvious just to clear all conditions.
Yeah.
I like the idea of people going, alright, I've got to take the heal to keep the snared off.
Yeah.
But yeah, knock down Ice Bite. If they clear the condition, they've given up the healing potential that the Agamemnon can then take advantage of.
Yeah.
The fact she can Ice Bite, knock down, have that big crowd out going on, give him a free charge on top of that. And you know how fucking good charge is for this guy.
Yeah.
He's getting his best control. He knocks down for nothing anyway. Just, yeah, comes in with that. Fucking piles of dice. Oh, man.
Really can't wait to try these guys out. Yeah, we haven't had a chance to get a game this week, but I'm definitely going to start boxing those Navigators.
Yeah, I think going to have a fair few Falcons worth navigating the game coming on. But yeah, initial feeling going in, what are you thinking?
I'm really surprised by how sort of viable 2-2 seems to be. From going in, I thought it was going to be 3-0, and if they get that ball off you and they just keep a hold of it, well, shit out of luck. But yeah, 2-2 seems really viable. I really like the idea of Ebb and Horizon just getting thrown up the pitch. You know, either you sink the influence into killing Ebb, or you just get the 1 VP for taking out Horizon, or you leave one of the strikers just floating around up there. But I don't know, I think it might be spoiled. I was looking at the cards and I was just going, 1-inch melee, man.
Oh no, 1-inch melee.
Yeah, I know.
Other teams can't, well, a lot of other teams are too abundant, and more importantly, I think 2-inch melee usually comes into it where you want to stay within.
Yeah.
Well, for guys like Horizon, 5-inch dodge, what does 2-inch melee mean to a guy who can do 5-inch dodge for nothing?
Yeah.
Like,
they've all got dodges, haven't they? So yeah, the idea of flying in to dodge out.
If you've got a relatively decent push dodge early on, you can negate 2-inch melee. And 9 times out of 10, you're wanting to negate it. And the guy who actually matters, your beater, Anchor Move, he's got 2-inch melee. But the guy who's actually going to want to get in there and take advantage of it,
usually
don't get. And fucking Windfinder, I've only got one. But one other thing, I go in, I spy. They're not down for free anyway. Even sturdy fuckers, we're gonna have trouble with that.
I think it's just a bit of a weird one. Like, I've been so excited for the Navigators for so long. Now that they're finally here, it feels like I'm a bit disappointed we haven't been able to get a game with them yet. But I almost feel like I don't want to talk about them just by looking at the cards. I want to give them that time on the table before,
yeah,
like creating an opinion. You know,
I almost want to get my opinion out early just to see how I feel after the game. You know my kind of feeling on it. You have that impression when you look at the card, and then you have, I don't know how to put it, you know, like, what's that, you know, Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Yeah.
Where the nerdy character has, like, a mouthfeel.
Yeah.
On his, like, food review. You go, oh, that's a nice pizza, but what's the mouthfeel? Like,
yeah.
And the funny thing, you get exactly what you mean. I feel like a board feel is like a thing.
Yeah.
I can look at the card and look at the review, but what about the board feel?
Just sort of... been sort of looking at the cards like on my lunch breaks and stuff and like, after work, but haven't been able to get them on the table. So like, as much as I'm looking at them, I'm taking everything I'm thinking with a pinch of salt, because I know the amount of times that I've tried to dojo stuff and just completely biffed it as soon as it's hit the table. So that's why I'm a bit tentative. I'm like, oh, I don't really want to, like, and I think the reason I'm feeling it particularly with the Navigators, whereas with the Falconers, I was more than happy to just sort of as soon as cards came out, we like sit and chat about them or whatever. I think part of it comes down to the fact that I know I want to play the Navigators. You know,
yeah.
I knew I didn't really want to play the Falconers, so I was happy to just sort of spitball about it.
Yeah,
but Navigators, I've got a feeling this might become my main team. You know, so I've
fucking hope not.
God, that would suck for you, wouldn't it? But yeah, I'm considering, sort of depending on how the board feel is.
Yeah.
I might put the fishy boys on the back burner, because that +1 to kick receive and getting another chance to get that 7 card from the game plan deck, I think it's so strong that like...
Alright, I'm going to put it out there right now. That +1 dice and +1 game plan shit, I don't think the minor guild for that week. I know the whole thing is like, oh, they can't have as many models because they need little edge. I don't think they do.
No.
And I know, I think people have already said a part of the design philosophy behind the Mino is that because they can't have as many models, they need a little, you know, extra something.
I think that's what a few people have suggested, yeah.
Just in, you know, terms of like the models themselves, all that team need to be a little up to kind of balance out. I don't like that at all. I really, if they've given them something to make them a bit more powerful, you know, because they can't have the variety of models, I don't like that generally, mainly because the thing I like about the minor guilds is that they've got their own identity. And you know me, I like identity in games like this. Mm. I like that a player can kind of express themselves through the models and through the game. And my kind of feeling going in is that you kind of make your bed.
Yeah.
And like going, alright, oh well, I'm gonna play the Navigators, I really like the team, I like look of on the card. But I think we should be more powerful because I don't get as many models. Like going, whoa, you knew what the thing going, you knew what, you know, I was a snake when you came in.
Yeah.
Like, you go, yeah, you kind of, you make your Faustian deal with these fuckers. And the fact that they get that extra, you know, extra bite.
The thing for me is, like, I could buy the Navigator's box, take my currently painted Siren and Angel, and go to an event, right? Like, after their release, obviously. And I'd get +1 to the rolls, and I'd get +1 card, because I haven't got as many options to choose from. But you would go to the same event, only taking 6 models, and you wouldn't get any benefits to having a reduced roster?
For me, like, it's not just a, okay, maybe it's my attitude going in. Having a limited roster, for me, doesn't mean the team is weaker.
Absolutely.
It means, for me, it opens up my options in a way. It puts me in a mind space where I go, what can I do with what I have? I love the challenge of it.
Yeah.
And when the Navigator, and, you know, obviously the Ratcatcher from the Falconer, and soon to becoming Cup Guild,
yeah.
The idea that they're meant to have something extra on top of, like, again, a guy shows up to the tournament and goes, you know what, I found something that, you know, Fisherman PvP, I'll just get that out of the box, six models.
Yeah.
Okay, if it was a general rule that if you only brought six models, whatever, you didn't, you know, you reduced your option for some fucking reason, like I do.
Mm.
You got a +1 die, +1 card, alright, fair enough, whatever. That was just a generic rule.
Yeah.
But I'm not even just talking about that rule generally. I don't like that rule anyway. I think that should be removed immediately. I just think it's completely unnecessary. I don't think the minor guild are so shit that they need it.
Yeah.
Like, if you played the Ratcatcher and gone, man, I'm running through these fuckers, they really needed that +1.
Yeah. It's, I can't see why they've got it, and it sounds stupid, and I know that it's because, you know, yep, they've got the limited roster, so they've got limited options, but I don't think so. I mean, I thought that the Navigators were going to be a complete 3-0 team, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought that it was going to be a case of, okay, you've picked the Navigators, so every single game you need to score 3 goals to win, but it's obvious that the 2-2 game is there, it's on if you need it. I thought that decision was going to have to be, if you want to just get 3-0 all day, take the Navigators. If you need to have a bit of flex, take the Fish, and then you've got access to a couple of beaters.
Mm.
You know. So yeah, I don't really know why, but yeah, like I was saying, the reason I felt comfortable sort of just riffing about the Falconers is that I knew that the closest I was ever going to get to playing them is talking about them, or you yeah. playing them, whereas Navigators, I want to actually properly invest some time in playing, so I kind of want to hold back from making any comments.
Well, when thinking Falcon Cow, I think me and you'll definitely start playing basically random teams, trying to vastly increase our general gameplay experience.
Yeah, there's only a couple that we're missing now, isn't there?
We're not far off completing the catching them all.
Got to catch them all, yeah. So what do we need? We need the second half of Brewers, second half of Masons.
We've got the second half of Brewers. What then?
Magic. So we need the second half of Masons. The Church?
Have we got Church, Ratcatchers.
Church, Ratcatchers, second half of the...
I'll be buying Falconer soon enough.
Oh, bloody hell. We've almost done it, haven't we?
Almost.
Almost caught them all.
But yeah, fucking... Yeah, I've never played against any of the minor guilds so far and gone, oh yeah, man, they need the edge because lack of options. You know, oh, if only they had, you know, they'd been able to bring more models, Pelarge would really start then.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I kind of feel like the issue is that with the limited, but well, with anything, you know, it's like a newer player who's playing one of the minor guilds might struggle, but then that doesn't really stand up, doesn't really.
I don't like it. I generally, that kind of a decline for.
I'm trying to find a reason to defend it, but I'm just sort of, because I'm trying to play devil's advocate here, but I'm struggling to see why it should be there. I can't defend it.
For me, part of playing a minor guild is going, I'm willing to accept the lack of options because I like the identity of the guild, basically, or the way these guys play. And it's like, oh, well, they can only goal score. Did you know they can only goal score ahead of time? You looked at the card, well, fuck it, it's not a secret until you buy the box.
Yeah.
You know where they're going, you know what their game plan is. Like, yeah, are you willing to make the deal you make to get on board with the minor guild, and it'd make even less sense in if we went with Alex Box's proposed tournament standard, where you can effectively bring 2 teams. So you can't just go, oh well, I've only got the Navigator and 2 models. You know, I'm completely hamstrung. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. You can, on this new tournament thing, if it becomes the standard, you can bring your whole fucking other guild.
That'd be brilliant.
So yeah,
I think it would be Shark and Windfinder for me. Yeah. I think I'd have to sideline my boy.
Yeah,
my boy Corsair. Yeah.
Like the The thing for me, maybe can come from my time in competitive gaming. Making stuff for new players better on the anticipation will help them get an edge against, you know, middling players. Almost always have to be taken advantage of by players who actually know what they're doing.
Yeah.
I've never known it to increase the benefit of the game. More importantly, kind of, I know that, you know me, I'm all about the experience. It's the experience against playing against them. I've had a few games against Ratcatcher where they've gone, oh yeah, get a plus one die, plus one game plan. I've gone, you don't need it. I've never played against Ratcatcher and gone, these guys just, yeah, they need the help I can get.
Yeah.
I'm going, this team is fucking hard enough to deal with it.
Yeah.
I'm already going in on negative. Like, you know, it kind of almost puts you in a, ugh. Like, oh, fucking hell. Alright, that on top of everything else. Like, yeah, I didn't go, man, the team is shit.
Yeah.
Thank God they got that plus one. But, yeah, moving on. What else have we got?
So, we had the Falconers sort of finally getting off the boat event at Leodis this weekend.
Yeah.
The Falconers, I think he called it the Falconers Arrive event, not the Falconers Launch event. And yeah.
They do like going, they'll just like, instead of like Falconers Launch, it's like going, yeah, shipping container special. Or for like the Amazon package.
Yeah, it was great to be at Leodis again. So as usual, the hand towel and bathroom, superb.
Yeah. Well, you attended this one on your own. I was thinking,
yeah, rode solo. And this is the best I've ever done at a tournament. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Top half for the first time. There's only 10 players, but I came fourth. Which is nice. Lost the third round pair up. I was pairing up, so I lost that. Otherwise, I would have come third, and the tournament would have ended. But yeah, really, really solid.
Have a look at the coming game.
Yeah, I mean, I took my fish, obviously.
Yeah.
I played David Mortician's round one, and I was really, really sweating about that.
Didn't Cameron take that entire tournament?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's clearly a hard draw. Obulus Mortician, wow.
Well, the thing is, I'm really struggling at the moment, because I've gone from that mindset of, right, here's my six models, get me out of the bottom tables, lads, here we go.
Yeah.
That's worked. I've come from the bottom tables, so now I've said it a few times, now I've gone back to my full guild and I've gone, right, I'm opening up the full toolbox here.
Yeah.
So I'm taking a full roster of 10. The biggest problem I'm having at the moment is deciding which captain to drop each time. I need to, and like, it's all well and good people saying, oh, this is the pick. Like, I know people are helping me by trying to tell me what the pick is, but I don't think I'm not getting much help from that, because what I'm actually looking for is to be able to know myself why that's the option. You know, like, I was going, oh well, should I drop Corsair? Because I mean, if like I've then got a bit of control myself, you know, I've got the threat of the drag to throw back a bit of control into the morts. But what I actually did end up doing was I dropped a shark striking list with the intention of just finishing the game as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
I was like, if I can score 3 goals before like it gets set up, then I've got a bit of, you know.
I feel like one counter the fishermen have to the Obulus Mortician in particular, like, I've heard this before about Mortician, the thing I don't like about playing against Obulus is that I feel like at no point am I safe.
Yeah.
But the good thing about the fishermen, they kind of go on the big activation. They, especially Shark, who doesn't really go, oh, pass around, I see where I feel, and then move in for the kill. You kind of like, can I get the ball? Yes, no? Well, away I fucking go. He can do in a single activation getting points and get the fuck out
of there. That's it. So like, we're instead of having to sort of spend the activations and influence setting something up, sort of completely telegraphing what you're doing, giving the Mortician to play the opportunity to just sort of dispel what you're doing, but on the same time, at the same time with the team I was taking, the control option was get the ball off me. You know, it's not hard. You know exactly what I need. You know exactly how to stop that. But yeah, I was that do I play Shark or do I play Corsair was a theme of this event, and I was sort of talking to myself about it quite a lot, and I was talking to my opponent about it, saying, no, I'm not too sure what the drop is here, in every game I played, like, sort of talking to them, not trying to sort of wheedle out of them, looking at their eyes, seeing when they got nervous if I said Corsair or not. But yeah, I didn't realise just how much I was doing it until it was the third round, second or third round, I think, where I was going, I'm not too sure whether to drop Shark or Corsair. And David Cameron just shouted across, just roll the dice, just roll for it. Just, you know, like, 1, 2, 3 Shark, 4, 5, 6 Corsair, here we go.
Oh, I think I'm going to go Shark. You roll down, get a 4. I'll try again.
Navigate is real. But yeah, that I think I was quite pleased with that, I'll be honest, because this game, obviously, seeing when you see who you're drawn against and you recognise the name, you know, especially from the fact that I've never been able to break out the bottom half of a tournament before, I've sort of, every time I've seen a name, I've gone, oh, for fuck's sake, almost, you know. But Drew, David, thought I was destined for the loss, but thought, no, come on, psych myself up, let's go for it. Went 12-8, which, you know, I'm pretty pleased with, because 12-8 is a goal away from winning, you know. It's a goal away from winning. Shark was on the pitch, so, but I think the issue I had was Shark was the guy who got casket timed.
Oh,
so that just closes you out for an entire turn. What I did was I saw that the casket time was on, and I mean, he must have seen it coming a mile off, but I just ran Angel in oh no, I've got no health, casket, don't attack me, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, please, definitely don't take Shark, take me instead. But no, he just closed it out.
That is a fucking killer. Yeah. Like, the encouraged it for me, encouraged enough you get an extra 2 VP for casket time. But that fucking ability to just remove someone from the gate, I hope in Queen Come 4, one or the other, flat out.
I don't think it will be. I think it's already been nerfed down, hasn't it? Millington told us how it used to be for the whole, I think it was for the whole game. If you got casket time, you didn't get back out of the box.
Like, for me, that from someone going out there, like, yeah, it got brought down from a literal I get to bring a flashbang grenade to my guild ball game to the idea that you get the additional VP for killer for me. It's not even, you get a bad turn, like bad if your captain gets taken down, it can absolutely fucking ruin us that turn. I mean, it just literally shuts down your turn, but it's the extra VP that killed for me mainly.
Two takeouts. I'm trying to think what it is, because taking that one out, you've obviously lose a takeout there, so you can go 2s and 1, can't you?
Yeah. You get a couple of goals, one cacket time, bang, I win. Even fucking witness me, you get the 2 points back. You know, it wouldn't have fundamentally changed your game all that much, but it would have put you on, it keeps you even almost.
Yeah, I really, really suffered that casket time turn. I spent the I was pleased with how well I played. I think that I gave him a good game at least. Then my second round, I think Longshanks is being particularly unfair to Tony here, that it's not a representation of the game. Like, when we finished, it finished 12-1. I beat Tony's Ferrite Blacksmiths 12-1. He ran the new veteran Tinder, who is terrifying. She's awful. I hate running into her. She solves the blacksmith issue of they need someone who can go first. You know what I mean? Like, how, like, their thing is, this guy activates to turn this guy on. This guy activates to turn this guy on. But if you need that sort of alpha strike, you've now got Vetsinda.
Yeah, she's an independent model.
Yeah, she can do terrifying amounts of damage, but don't worry, she's also got that tackle on one. Like, yeah.
Tackle on one?
Yeah.
I completely forgot. I can't remember that. I'm so concentrated on that, like, sweeping charge, clearing strike, you know, just fuck you machine that she is.
Tackles on one with a 360.
Oh, God, man. Fucking hell. What has she got as well? Yeah, Grim Vengeance.
She's got the Grim Vengeance.
Yeah, the free attack on the takeout, sweeping charge, chain strike. For me, sweeping charge, chain strike is already fucking amazing.
Yeah,
that ability to impale as well. Bang, kick inch away, free damage, burning, -1 armor, just getting fucking up. Love it.
My entire game plan rested on the fact that I needed to take Vetsinda out of the equation. So Tony got an incredible kick scatter turn one. He made, like, completely the right decision with, because, like, I set my guys up. He was kicking, moved up, did the kickoff, and it was like it was almost touching the midline, the centre line, and it was as far off to the side of the pitch it could be. It was like the base was nestled in the corner between the centre line and the edge of the pitch. And I was just like, I can't get it. I was just sitting there, and there was just that moment of, like, the my world started falling around me. I was like, the fuck am I going to do? So I was like, okay, well, I need to set up. So turn one was literally just throwing models up, like setting up. Two came round closer towards it. One put Siren and Tentacles went far on the other wing, so I could try and pass down the line, with Shark and Angel threatening in the middle still, while Jack and Skarner basically went to go and get the ball. Jack, because look how close to the edge of the pitch we are there, num-num-num-num, and Skarner smoke bomb 10 inches of movement to get it and get it back out to the real strikers.
We could actually reach it.
Yeah, well, okay. I couldn't reach it on turn one.
Even with Shark?
Literally no one could get it, because of I positioned Shark front and center.
Yeah, I thought that'd be. I feel like there's an area he can't reach from Connor.
Well, what I would have had to Quickfoot and Tidal Surge himself, and then he would have needed someone to bounce off. He literally couldn't get it because of his place and stuff. I could have got it if I'd used Tidal Surge on Sakana. The issue being that I would have used Shark's activation to move Sakana. I'd have thrown Quickfoot on Angel, Tidal Surge Sakana, and then we maybe could have got a turn one goal out of it. The issue being that by Tidal Surging Sakana, I then would have passed the clock over to Tony, who would have just got Ferrite to pick it up at that point.
Oh, yeah, okay. So
it was a case of I either leave it and set up and hopefully which he did, actually. He kept the threatening Ferrite for that entire first turn, which was nice. Yeah. But, it was a case of, right, do I try and do the really difficult stuff and get it, or do I set up for a proper turn two? The game went 12-1, and we said afterwards, we both said, that's completely not representative of what happened.
No, I think it is.
No,
I don't care about what you actually did in the game, Alex. I'm looking at long track 12-1. You destroyed Tony.
No, it was. He had the game like locked down. The ball was constantly on lockdown from him. Every single turn, it was right. How the hell am I going to get this off him? Get it out to the player and score the goal, which I was managing to do. But he was getting that nice blacksmith scrum forming up. I think my saving grace was that I managed to. I sort of hooked Tentacles on the end of a line and sort of dangled him out to the far side, like away from the scrum. And Vetsinda took the bait and charged in that way. If she charged in across to where the scrum was forming, I don't know what I would have done. But yeah. I just managed to sort of keep Vetsinda away from the danger zone. You know, there was a couple of times where he almost got his. I was managing to heal up. Because when things start going a bit south, Shark just turned 6 influence into 6 momentum and then started throwing heals out. We're looking for the... Because the good thing about when I need to flip that is with Shark, the momentous dodge on one, you know, you can just get away from everyone.
Yeah.
Well, not get away from everyone. I mean, like, just run up, hit someone 6 times, turn it into 6 momentum.
Right, 3 goals.
Yeah, 3 goals.
But yeah, I imagine a close one, but looked brutal by the board.
Yeah, well, that's it. It was much. I said it's such a shame you didn't get points for positioning, because Tony, like, he completely locked down an entire side of the field.
Yeah,
it was really good. And what was nice about that was Tony's one of the newer players in the area, so it's really nice to sort of see him coming on. Like every time I see him at an event, he's exponentially better than last time. So he's just good. Like, and playing the blacksmith, he's done. He's let his nose then inside out now. So yeah. he's just going to become an app. He's definitely going to become a serious threat soon.
Well, the blacksmith, you can't not.
Yeah.
A fucking monster.
Yeah.
Next game.
Yeah, so this one, because of how many people it was, this was round 3, I got the I was the pair up, and if I'd won this game, it would have ended there. I'd have been third, happy days.
Wait.
But unfortunately I lost it. It was against Chris Chalak. Sorry if that's completely wrong. Chris, that 70s bloke on long tracks, and he played Union, but ran the church with coin. So it was Season Brisket, coin, Veteran Fangtooth, Season Spigot, Mist, and Grace. So it looked like it was going to be goals, 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 ping pong. Yeah. So he sort of scores the first goal with Mist, and then dodges into base-to-base with it to be into the goalpost to be in cover. So first thing I did was I moved Tentacles down to that thing where between the 50mm of the goal and the 40mm of Tentacles, you couldn't fit Mist through. So Mist would have had to come down towards, like, would have had to loop around to take a load of movement off him. And that was basically missed for the entire game. It was basically just trapped there because it wasn't worth the influence sink to free him when influence was needed in other places of the board. So that one move, like, I was happy to sacrifice tentacles for mist for that entire game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris won 12-8. It was so swingy. It was both of ours at one point. At points you were looking at it going, how hasn't Chris won yet? And then there was points you were looking at it and you were going, oh, this is mine. Like, at the top of one turn, I had 3 influence on Siren, who was 7.5 inches away from the edge of the pitch. I had the plot card where you charge for 1 influence. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's right near the goal. She just needs 1 momentum to score, right? So I spend the 1 influence to charge Veteran Fangteeth. I need the 1 hit for the momentous dodge to dodge out of him so I can NRB in to take the shot. Roll it, didn't get it. Ah, well, what I'll do is I'll roll again, try and hit them. I didn't hit anything on the first one. And then I'll now roll again.
Oh, again, Fangteeth.
Yeah, it was a defensive stance and I just biffed the roll.
Oh.
Yeah, and then I had 7 dice needing, because your defensive stance he was 3s and 2, 7 dice, I rolled 2 3s, and then the next time, and then I rolled again, and then Chris remembered we'd both completely forgotten that he had resilience.
Yeah.
And Chris, really decent about it, was just like, no, I should have said he got it, I should have remembered, should we take that entire activation back?
Yeah.
So because we knew where Siren was, we just took it straight back there. So instead of going in on Fangteeth, I've sprinted around to just basically do the same thing into coin, bounce off, bought the first attack, didn't get anything, bought the next attack, didn't get anything.
Yeah.
She couldn't do anything at this point, so I booted the ball, and then the ball was free, sort of got booted around a bit, but then eventually Chris managed to close it out of a goal.
Yeah.
Which again, disappointing to lose, but the 2 people I lost to in this tournament were the people on the top table for 1st and 2nd place.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was just like, yeah, alright, I'll take that.
Not bad to lose to win.
Yeah. And then, especially in my last game, which I went 12-4, I played into Johnny Cannon. He picked up the Falcon, he was playing them out of the box.
Ooh.
But yeah, it's the first time I've ever managed to beat Cannon. Played him a few times at different events, he's always thoroughly smashed me. Like, ooh. Thoroughly smashed me.
All turning around now, aren't
it? Yeah, he's the one who taught... He's the person I played my first ever Alchemist game against.
Oh.
And he killed my entire team. Like, that's how he won. He won. He killed everyone once.
Yeah.
I think he killed Salt twice. But yeah, that's how he beat me in that first game that we ever played. And yeah, it's just... The Falconers are pretty brutal, but I think I was quite lucky that he seems to be just starting to get back into Guild Ball after a bit of a time away. So I think I caught him on a bad day with having not played a while, playing models that he'd literally just bought and he hasn't run before.
Perfect.
But that doesn't matter because I got the 12, so
there you go.
I was overall really pleased with that. I clocked out against David Cameron. Apart from that, I was fine on clock the entire time, and I'm going to forgive myself that one because that's morticians.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a good day. And one thing I noticed, the main difference I noticed across all of them over winning. So first time I've ever come top half. First time I've ever come fourth, best I've ever done at a tournament, only clocked out in one game, and that game was against morticians and someone who bloody knows the morticians.
Yeah.
And the main difference from that compared to any other tournament, A, you weren't there to knock me down the rankings.
Oh yeah, I want that, put you in fifth.
And B, I forgot I was going. I forgot I was going. I woke up in the morning because my alarm went off, and I was like, "What the fuck is this alarm going off? It's a Saturday. Why am I getting up at this time of day?" And I was like, "Oh shit, yeah, got that tournament to go to." Yeah, and I had some breakfast, had a coffee, you know, had my headphones in, drove there like without any of the sort of. And because I went on my own, like I drove on my own, I wasn't talking to people in the car, like riling up, getting excited for the tournament. I sort of almost turned up like, "What are we doing? We're playing the Guild Ball. All right then." Yeah, so there was a complete. Yeah, it was amazing how much that not sort of freaking myself out about it. Whereas before, going into a player of like David Cameron's caliber, like first round of a tournament, like my usual thing is to do a complete nosedive, explode in a fiery wreck, shaking and freaking out the entire time, picking up measuring sticks, going, "Oh, is that the 8? No, that's a 4." Like, you know what I mean? But Yeah, it was just really cool, collected the entire time. Yeah, pleased with that.
No, I think you've done. I think you've done well. Just on the continuing arc of you as a player. Yeah, I mean, I think generally looking at your general call, you know, 12. You're 2 wins for 12. Obviously, you're 2 wins for 8.
Mm.
So never. It doesn't seem to have been a point where you're completely out of the game. Like, yeah, you know, there are no 12-4 or they're actually a 12-1. You know, yeah, you're not locked out. You're never at a point where you seem to be locked out of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. A good fucking show in Idaho.
Yeah, really pleased with it. Really, really pleased with it, to be honest.
And you should be. Next time, no, we'll crush this shit.
Yeah.
But yeah. While you were, while originally on the Saturday this tournament taking place, I was meant to be in Manchester celebrating a friend's birthday, and they got in touch and went, oh, sorry, I meant next weekend. And, oh, well. But it was a sheer coincidence. The largest fighting game tournament. Guys, this next bit's going to be fighting game heavy, so.
Yeah. So if you've got no interest in fighting games whatsoever, I hope you enjoyed episode 15 of the firm. The tournament tray was given out. We've already got in touch with the person who got it. I did a Facebook Live and it was super awkward, so hop on the Facebook page if you want to see that.
We should have announced it on the podcast. I think getting at the point to like make people tune in. But yeah, fuck it. I thought it was funny anyway.
I felt super awkward. So that's on its way to America, which Dave's very happy about paying postage on that.
Hey, can it do it?
Then, apart from that, we've got a tournament coming up in October. There's only 2 spaces left now.
Only 2 left.
So, if you're looking for a tournament on October the 20th, it'll be Season 4. Season 4 will have just dropped. Head on over to our Facebook page, it's at Hooligans Cup.
Yeah.
And buy one of the last 2 tickets. That's if you're not interested in fighting games. If you're interested in fighting games, Ryan's about
I'll
to go off on one now.
I'll be trying to apply it to Guild Ball for fuck's sake. We won't just be talking about fighting games. I won't get into the logistics of fighting games. I'll mainly be talking about the tournament experience. But Evolution, which is the largest fighting game tournament in the world, which I'm glad, because I haven't missed an Evolution in 8 years. I've never been to it personally. Sure. It's in fucking Las Vegas.
Mm.
But in terms of watching it, I watch it every year. It's a tradition. And yeah, this is a very, very, very big tournament. Street Fighter V had about 5,500 players. And this is a bit of an unusual one this year, because a UK player took it. And looking at the game generally, there's so many principles of tournament playing that just take place like live on screen. I was watching the Smash final, because I didn't have a choice on top 8. I fucking hate Smash. Super Smash Brothers, you play competitively. And it's
why is that?
I don't know. But it's super popular. Yeah. I don't engage with it in a fighting game. What I do engage with, though, is the experience of the players. And you see the fucking gambit of character types. In top 8, everyone from the nervous-shaking guy, the one guy who just looked so deflated, just being on stage. And even in top 8, like, you know, he...
Classic, people like me can actually get that far.
Smash had a shitload of people complete. I think 4,000 people at Smash, or something like that. I don't have the exact number, though. But a fucking shitload of people. So this guy in top 8, he clearly fucking mowed through a good chunk of these players. Yeah, you can tell just by looking at something, guy nervous. And they've got a crowd. Imagine, like, if you get put on top table at National, you're going to be streamed. At Evo, if you're on stream, 150,000 people are watching. 5,000 people are watching there. On the final day, it's all spectators, only top 8. So you've got an arena round with, and I say an arena round with 8,000, about 8,000 people. Because people don't just go to compete, they've got to watch, basically. Mm. So you've literally got a packed fucking house. And it's a fucking, basically a miniature stadium. They're all watching you play. There's a giant fucking projectortron screen, like a cinema screen, playing your game. You're on stage, literally. They've got live announcers on the stage. So they've got commentators on the stream, and then they've got people actually in the, like, basically fucking MCs narrating your game. And you can hear them, you get headphones, but you can effectively hear them live. And apparently, like, if the crowd gets hyped up enough for your game, you can literally feel the vibrations from their shouting coming through. Like, it's not a fucking... I can only imagine the pressure some of these fuckers are under. But yeah, everyone from the shaky, nervous guy to the, I'm gonna fucking win this. But I think one of the more interesting... And there are plenty of, like, interesting game takeaways. and different type of player. Like, guy can't get in your face. And I know in Guild Ball, because of the nature of the community, they're a lot more, you know, sedate. You could write here. Like, popping off or getting in someone's face. Basically, trash talk isn't really that common.
Can you imagine that? Just going up, you put your tournament tray down, and, like, someone looks at them and they go, "Morning, you alright?" And you're just like, "Dickhead." How would you even trash talk in Guild Ball?
It's too long-winded. There's too much conversation involved. Yeah. Like, and it kind of implied that you need to get along with the other player. Just for the sake of the nature of the game.
Can you imagine that? You're playing with someone and they just keep trying to chat shit and you're like, "Come on, dude."
You're having a quiet game at one end and you just hear it on the other side of me, like going, "Welcome to the real world, bitch!"
just got this air horn.
Oh, fucking God. Yeah, it's just not the nature of the community.
Yeah.
But I think it's also a question of volume. Like, at National, you had, you know, 60 odd people went to that. You know, there's a lot more of an in-group thing going on there. Only 60 people, really. You go to fucking Evolution, 5,000 people there. You're going to get every character type.
Yeah.
And because it's so short and intense and quick, that ability of, like, being... If you get in Street Fighter, if you break top 8, just 8th place, you get $1,800.
Not bad, isn't it?
Not bad at all. You win the whole thing, you take away 40 grand. So, if you get 2nd place, 17 grand. It's not a negligible amount of money.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you get top 8, you've been refunded. You've got your hotel, your flight, your whole thing back. You get 1st place, you've earned a year's worth of earning. You know what I mean? Like, and that amount of pressure, it's not hugely applicable to Guild Ball, but I think people know that feeling. And especially if you've got National, I imagine it's not a negligible thing to be on the top table and be on stream and go, "Shit, people are watching. People are analyzing. It's been recorded." Depending on the day, you might even have a commentator over you.
No.
Fucking hear him. You know what I mean? Imagine that going, like, "Oh my god, you're coming for that play. Oh, you move that model and
idiot."
You hear two commentators and go, and I think generally I was impressed at some of the attitude. So a UK player took 1st place in Street Fighter V. Street Fighter V, the most popular game, again, the most entrants by far, and the most prize money by far, more importantly. Like, okay, you take 1st place in Street Fighter V, you get 40 grand. The guy who took it for the UK, called Problem X, not a hugely well placing player, but this guy can win in fighting games. You have winner's bracket, loser's bracket.
Yeah.
So effectively two tournaments take place at the same time. If you lose one, you get knocked into the losing bracket and you play out the losing bracket tournament. If you win the entire losing bracket, you end up going into grand final. So grand final is double elimination. So everyone's in the winning bracket, technically.
Yeah.
If you lose one, you go into the losing bracket, and then another person who loses and winning, they go into the losing bracket.
Right. So,
and then they play out.
So, like, if you got 64 players at the start of a round, they're all in the winner's bracket. After the end of the first round, you've got 32 in each.
You've got 32 in winning, 32 in losing.
Yeah.
And they basically run two independent tournaments. But to put it simply, if you lose twice, you're out of the tournament.
Right.
But
you can have one bad game.
Yeah, but the thing thinking on this, right, if you go into grand final, so let's say you win the winner's bracket, right, you go into grand final. Grand final doesn't take place between the winner, because you both get to lose. If you win the winner's bracket, you're in grand final in the winner's side. The guy who wins the loser's bracket goes into grand final on loser's side. So what that means is, you play in 3 out of 5 rounds. If the loser's guy beats the guy in winner 3 out of 5, it resets the bracket because the guy in winners hasn't lost yet.
Yeah.
So they play a grand final again and it resets the bracket. So the benefit of being in the winner side is that you get, basically, you're in grand final, you get another go.
Yeah.
That's your kind of, you know, what you get for winning. So Problem X is in, he beats everyone, he's in grand final on winner side.
Yeah.
Now, I can't overstate this enough, right? Like, here you go to a tournament, yeah? And I want you to kind of imagine the same. You go into a tournament, this is 5,500 people, and you've literally gone the entire tournament undefeated. You go to grand final. You watch a guy in Lucas bracket play out. Who comes in? Takedo. I want you to imagine this, right? Takedo could unironically call himself one of the greatest fighting game players who has ever lived. Obviously not unbeatable, he was in the loose bracket. But this guy, I cannot overstate enough. Street Fighter has been out 30 years. This guy's been playing professionally for at least 20 of those years. He's one of the greatest fighting game players of all time. And to give you a taste of, like, he called them, one of his nicknames is the Demon. Like, he there's no one in the world he cannot beat. And I don't mean that in like a bullshit feel-good thing. He's just good. If I had to choose between beating Takedo in Street Fighter or in real life, like if my life depended on this, beating Takedo in Street Fighter or fighting the Mountain in real life, I would fight the Mountain. I can visualise myself actually winning that somehow. I would play it 1,000 games I'd never beat Takedo once. He's just that good. And to give another taste of his personality, and I say a champion's mindset. Recently there was something called the Capcom Cup. If you won the prize pool for Capcom Cup was $250,000. To give a taste of how much money that is, the guy who won Capcom Cup, and Takedo went in Grand Finals in Capcom Cup, but the guy who beat him called Menaradi, he was from the Dominican Republic. The prize money from Capcom Cup, when Menaradi took it home, made him a millionaire in his own home currency overnight because the exchange rate. Takedo lost that, stone-faced. Oh well, you win some, you lose some.
I'm hearing a lot about this Takedo guy losing at the minute, mate.
Oh, don't get me wrong. He's lost a few, but he's won so many. It's almost pointless to say. I bring that up just a comparison of how he treats the game.
Yeah.
Because he lost to the guy, lost a shitload of money, whatever.
Sociopathic, doesn't matter.
Damn, cool. Yeah. He played a 1-10 casually against a guy called Daigo, who's another one of the great, who is literally considered the greatest who's ever lived.
Mm.
Lost about, you know, respectably, something like 10-6 game. The 1-10 game wins. Daigo won 10, won the set. Takedo was standing next to him, and he was in tears. And people did not get it. A lot of the community have speculated about it for a long time, and they went, why is this insane so much? He lost Capcom Cup and that was $250,000 out the window. And someone interviewed him and went, you know, how come it affected so much losing to this guy in the 1-10? He went I've been playing this game most of my life, and it wasn't about the reason it affected me so much. I wanted to be able to say, look in the mirror and say, I'm the best who's ever lived at this game. And when I lost to him, I couldn't look in the mirror knowing the kind of player he is and say, I'm the best who's ever lived. That's the kind of attitude he went in with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this is a guy who didn't care about $250,000, but the fact he couldn't look himself in the mirror and go, I am the best who's ever fucking lived at this game, upset him. That's who you're going in the grand finals against.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Problem makes sense at the grand finals for this guy, and has a great attitude going in. He plays his game. Now, Street Fighter isn't directly comparable to Guild Ball, but the principles convert over really well. Problem X tried to play his game, and Takedo threw some wrenches in the work. Takedo managed to reset the bracket against this guy, and I can't tell you how many times Takedo's been in losing, gone to the grand finals, and just fucking crushed them. And one thing to take away from Takedo and the way he plays, one thing I love about the way he plays the game, he really gets to know the opponent.
Right.
And that's something you can do in Guild Ball. I imagine if he played Guild Ball, he'd be spectacular at it. Because the thing that's great, especially over, and this is over about, if you have a long set of Street Fighter, it's about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Even in Grand Finals reset bracket, it's about 30 minutes. Takedo had 1.5 hours to get to know you as a player, he'd know what you were going to do before you'd even do it, and he'd know you were making a mistake. Like, his ability to get to know the tendencies of his opponent, and get basically know you as a person through the game, is incredible. He can read your mannerisms. He can tell by the way you play where you're panicking, where you're feeling, where you're weak. And he reset the bracket again, probably. And I thought, fucking hell, he's going to just run off with it. Because the longer, one of Takedo's strengths as well, is the longer he plays, the better he gets.
Mm-hmm.
The more you play against him. And you could just see the look. And the thing I was really impressed with is that Problem X kept calm, which is a principle that shot well to Guild Ball. He didn't let the panic set in.
Mm.
And you could tell, he stuck to his game plan. He knew where he was strong. And because he lost a couple of games in where he was potentially strong, you could tell he started to falter where his game plan was previously working.
Mm.
It was a bit back and forth. He did lose the first bracket, but it was 2-3, Takedo. So he'd won a couple where he was strong, where Takedo started throwing wrenches into the work from his game plan, he started to buckle.
Yeah.
Instead of going, whoa, that fucked up once. And again, we've all had this in the game. How many times have we had the feeling of a good shell and it hasn't worked out and you've gone, well, shit, that were a bad idea to begin with. Instead of going, no, that was a perfectly good play, and the fact it didn't go my way, the dice didn't go my way, or the guy tried to do the little thing to get away. Yeah, fuck it, no, that's still a good go. Off I go. Continue with the game plan. But yeah, that ability to just stay calm. And then there's another element of the game where they go into the final set, and Problem X goes back to his initial way of playing. He doesn't let Takedo dictate the pace of the match. And another good thing to keep in mind as well, don't let your opponent put you on the back foot in that way where you're playing just again. he got out. You can literally see him go from the mindset of I've got to stop this guy from doing what he's doing to I'm going back to what gets me victory, and that's really what turned it round. And he beat Takedo in grand final. But the thing that impressed me about it, like, he kept calm. And like, all the pressure in the world, 40 grand on the line, 160,000 people for grand final tuned in, for 8,000 fucking people in a stadium cheering you, live commentating on the thing. And he didn't have any, I think he had his headphones on, but it's loud, you know. And they're on stage as well. Yeah. So you can literally see him walking around, like, looking up at the screen, like, hyping up your... And they want you to win as well, which is even more pressure. Takedo, Takedo taking grand finals is nothing special. And it's always something that I'm super curious about, in a way. How people would do if they knew they were being spectated. Yeah. And how they'd feel if the audience actually had a bit of, like, a... Imagine 5,000 people, the second you move your 4-inch widget, go... Oh, he took the lead, he did it! Yeah, fucking Jamie Giblin with a microphone next to the table. I can't believe he took the lead! Roll 5 dice, you don't get out. He didn't get out. And now he's surprised, ladies and gentlemen. But that ability to like to see it in real time, that ability to stay cool and stick to your game plan and go back to where you are strong, like, yeah, in real time, so fucking good to see. And against a guy who literally embodies what it means to be a champion, like, yeah, like a guy who's dedicated his life to something. And there are so many people like that, but yeah, okay, the guy who's like poo-poo $250,000 and shed tears at the thought that he's not the best who's ever lived. Like, that's the guy. You imagine anything in life and that's the guy you've got to be. Yeah. Fucking hell, I couldn't imagine, like, what you think. How do you convince yourself to beat an opponent like that?
But it came down to the fact that he went from playing his game, like, trying to, well, like, to translate it over, he went from playing his game, like trying to score points,
yeah,
to this guy started pushing him back on the back foot. He started playing defensively, which meant that he wasn't getting any closer to winning himself. And then he just went, no, I need to fight for it.
He was getting stuff that was getting his goal on the board. When the opponent put a wrench in the works, rightfully so, he abandoned the thing almost entirely.
Yeah.
And the thing that made it impressive for me, he realised in real time that the original plan was working, and the fact it had a couple of hiccups didn't mean he shouldn't keep on with the pressure. And he did a bunch of all different things, all fighting game related, but to the sense it applies to Guild Ball, the championship's mindset, man, going in there going, like, I know what I need to do to help my guy push my points, push my victory. And not to mention, it's all kind of an interesting thought experiment. Actually going to national in, like, okay, one of the biggest tournaments of the year, compared to something like this that was so fucking huge. Yeah, it's obvious Guild Ball will never get to that level. It's just not, you know, doable. But there are a lot of little elements that I kind of always wonder how they translate over to Guild Ball. The idea of being spectated. I know they've got a stream camera, but it's not quite the same.
It would be, like, that's the sort of, the closest I think we could get is the final of Worlds at SteamCon,
yeah,
not only being streamed, but it's as if they just went, right, everyone who's here at SteamCon, stop what you're doing, you've got to come sit in this room and watch this game.
Yeah.
Not only have you got to watch it, you've got to cheer.
Yeah, well, imagine, yeah, you've got the whole thing, you know, you've got... you know, fucking music on in the background, all that shit. You got the whole, you got the live commentator going, alright, oh my god, Dan's going first. Do a lot of people going, does everyone in the room want Dan to win? And everyone's like, fuck yeah, do yeah, fuck yeah, like
it. Is,
yeah,
is that the reaction? So, like, the MC goes, do you want him to win? And then loads of people in the crowd go, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, much of them actually care. Like, it means much to them. Like, yeah, and everyone loves an underdog, you know. Fighting games are almost always divided by nationality. And imagine if you went to British Nationals and they were commentated on in that way, and it was a, you know, a German murder machine versus, you know, the most British nice guy ever. You know, you could tell he was just lovely by talking to him. And he had all his friends there with him as well. Again, the second Problem X took the grand final, about 10 guys from the UK rushed the stage and they had him up on shoulders in no time. I assume drinks run in that night. Maybe not in fucking Vegas though, but... But yeah, dude, like, I really have so many principles, I can't even go into them all right now, but so much from that converts over to Guild Ball through attitudes in general. Like, the specifics of the game don't match, and the settings of the tournament don't match, but if someone in such a high-pressure situation, what can I take from that that means something to me? And like, hey, staying calm, sticking to your game plan, not letting the other guy dictate the pace of the match, not letting his attitude get to you as well, because Takedo Kondo throughout the entire match was smiling, looking and clicking, going, I've got you now, motherfucker. Yeah. And the commentator said it on the very last match, Takedo's still smiling, and the commentator went, oh, Takedo's still smiling. I don't believe it. I think that's just to try and
psych him out.
Yeah, get problem to think he's not. But they went, we're looking at gameplay, he's a bit spooked. He was doing basically Hail Mary for the match. Like, you know, over the top playing to try and get, that's the equivalent of just running someone down the board and going, oh, they're vaguely gonna try and get the ball. Or everyone just piles in on one model to try and get a 2 VP at the end of the match. But yeah, recognising desperation in the opponent. And even though problem didn't show it, in terms of the gameplay, he knew that he had him on the ropes and that he didn't want to, you know, he was giving him enough rope to hang himself. Letting, and again, another great principle, let your opponent make his mistakes. Like, yeah, don't get too hyped up on that whole, oh, I think I'm going to go here. Don't go, oh, yeah, go there. You know, just play it calm. Let them make their mistakes. Okay, it's not your job to help them win. And keeping that in mind in the tournament mindset. Man, I could literally talk about these games all day. And I kind of wish that, I think on a one-on-one conversation basis, I could sit anyone down and go, listen, I can use this knowledge from fighting games to help you improve on any level in your ball. And I think it's a big part of why I do so well at the game generally. The rules are almost kind of immaterial. I think, like I've mentioned it so many times before, the competitive attitude I've had. Oh, and another kind of quirk of the tournament. In top 8, it's an American player called the Cool Kid. The Cool Kid 93 or something like that. It's just his online handle. But in my very first online Street Fighter Top 4 tournament, I'd beaten that guy.
Yeah.
And I won that tournament. It's just like a casual online thing. But I remember going in going, oh man, he got top 8. Might have to pick up the controller again.
Dust off the old arcade stick.
$1,800 not to... And that's another thing about Gilbo. I wonder if it'd be different if actual money was on the line. You know, I do think that's a big part of it. Where, you know, you obviously pay to enter a tournament most of the time. But I kind of half wonder how differently people would play if, you know, it's actually a good bit of cash to get back from there. And I wonder, maybe in a future tournament, I might consider experimenting with that. Like, you can, you know, tournament money for a prize pool, if only just to get back the money you've put in.
Depending on legality of gambling and stuff.
I'm sure. I don't think it can go to gambling.
No.
Like, you have tournament practice all the time. If you can win at Wimbledon, why not? You know, it's, but yeah, there are all these little aspects of the game that I almost kind of want to try and convert over to Guild Ball and see how people do and what they think. Like, yeah, do you play differently knowing you might get money? Do you, you know, how much are you willing to gamble, put down on yourself knowing you might reap a bit of that back? It's a really hard one to kind of share. But I'll definitely consider putting that down in the future, having cash money on the line.
Or
maybe even having a spectated grand final where top table, everyone kind of finishes their game. And we all come and have a look.
That'd be interesting.
I wonder how people would do. Like, I've already talked about coaching before, stuff like that. Yeah, fighting game coaching is super common. Yeah. It's not uncommon to have some guy run on stage and go, what do you do? I think in grand finals, they have a hard rule against it. But the fact they've got a hard rule, I think that's just for convenience of speeding up games. But I half wonder. Man, imagine that. Yeah, you're in grand final, got a couple of guys coaching you, got the crowd looking in, going, all right, what are you going to do? Where are you going to go? Man, I hate to hijack it with my fighting game shit, but I can't overstate how much of my competitive mindset from Guild Ball carries over from competitive gaming and attitude elsewhere.
Yeah.
I think a couple of people said it in regard to the podcast before, but they're like going, I like the idea that you take things from other areas of life and try and bring them into the game, and I think that's what we'll try and do more often.
It's certainly something to think about, that, and spectating a grand final would change it, wouldn't it, for the two players. But you sort of then, how unfair would that be to on them, you know, to apply that extra pressure, you know, because I've done it before where, like, at events, well, you know, I'm shit on clock, so like I've been to events before where I've been one of the last tables playing. I'm usually one of the last tables playing around, you know, especially when I'm playing corset. And there's been more than once that, like, even just the people we go, like, you always sort of go over and have a cheeky look at how your mate's doing when you finished, you know, and you look over. But there's been more than once that I've, like, said to people, can you please fuck off? I can't think with three people standing watching. Like, so, like, the idea of, like, everyone else in the tournament, apart from the other person, just sat there, arms crossed, watching the game.
Hey,
yeah.
Well, again, that's the real question, isn't it? Do you have the champion's mindset? And what would the champion's mindset say? I don't care if the whole fucking world is watching, I'm going to win this goddamn game. maybe a tall order for some people, but yeah. Mm. But maybe we can start at just three people. Mm. But I think that's a part of it, going in there with the right attitude. And a couple of people spectating, maybe even reacting to the game, throw you off and like, go, were you going to win to begin with? You never know.
I can just imagine it, like sort of just moving a model and sort of going, like playing shark and just sort of taking that 8-inch stick and putting it down from the goal and just hearing a...
Well, I imagine just that little hum of like just two people talking, like getting up for the shark goal. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, eight dodge, fourth title surge, then the kick. He does have a kick. Oh, he's just going to secure the ball. The fair play from Alex and the response. Yeah, I half wonder. Like,
also, I think it must be a different, like, commentating on this sort of game is like on a different level. Whereas on that, how long are the rounds? Something's always happening.
You have 99 seconds.
Something is always happening. You know, it's like the back and forth. Whereas with a miniatures game, you can sort of imagine, like watching the stream with Alex Hall and Jamie Giblin from that. I couldn't do it. You were sitting there the entire time, just going.
I could commentate the shit out of a game. I'd love to do that.
Should we have a go? What we should do is bring up the Nats games, kill the audio, and commentate on top of them. See what
we should, yeah. That'd be interesting. Maybe we do that for a bonus episode. Should we really... not really think for a podcast, but...
Because how the fuck would that work? Yeah. Oh, you can see here, clearly Sakana's going to go for the smoke bomb sprint.
Maybe, that'd be a nice little YouTube experiment, I think. Mm. I think I could commentate the shit out of the game. I love that. I think being able to hear the players well, I think they're mic'd up out there. I think they've got a thing they can hear the players so they can keep up the game. I find that even more interesting. I want to get on that shit. I want to get on
We'll give it a go at some point. We'll figure out the logistics, but we'll do a bit of commentating. Because I'm sure that'll be hilarious. Yeah. Just watch us crash and burn at that.
Oh, yeah. Without the cold hand of editing.
Oh god.
That was a brutal take out by veteran Fangtooth. Man, as brutal as my browsing history. Brutal, yeah, okay.
Are we done?
Yeah, and you know, I'm half wondering if the Go Fuck Yourself outro isn't quite working for everyone on this podcast. I think at least 50% of the podcast. You know, I half wonder if, like, Go Fuck Yourself is my thing. I think maybe you need your own version of the outro. We take turns that way. If just, I outro, Go Fuck Yourself, your outro.
Just apologise.
Have a good day, ladies and gentlemen.
Have a wonderful day. Two locals at our game club have started playing again. They picked up some models in season one, and they've started playing again. And Alex was saying that they listen to podcasts, in bed, and they said that it's a bit weird because we know these people, so we're just hearing voices that we know. So I might take my outro to just being good night, guys.
we recently announced the winner of the contest, for the tournament trip, and you did the video, and you're like going, oh well, you know, I'm not gonna say it, and I immediately commented, replied to the guy who won, going, and a huge go fuck you come. <from me." laughs> Well, you know, my kind of thinking behind it, that's how I talk to people I know. Like, it wouldn't, for me, turn around to people friends I know and go, like, oh, go fuck you, fuck you, I'll catch you next time. It's just completely how I talk to people when I'm on friendly terms with them. So the idea that the goal, I know it seems weird to say, it seems a bit counterintuitive. There's something almost kind of that feels almost disrespectful about going, well, you know, hey person listening, I will catch you next time, good buddy. It's not what I'm like with my friends. It's like, I go, yeah, you're an idiot, go fuck yourself, Norbert. That's kind of how I talk to them. So it feels almost a bit disrespectful about going, oh no, you're different from my friend. You know, I can't treat you the same way I treat people I normally do in real life. If we were friends in real life, I'd treat you like a stranger, basically, by going, oh, hello there, buddy. It's just not what I'm like. And if you're gonna listen to me this much, you may as well get to know me properly. I don't want people meeting me in real life going, like, oh, I'd really like to get to know Ryan, he seems nice on the podcast.
Oh my god, who's this guy?
You're like, oh, yeah, oh well, now that, oh, sorry, that's just my podcast version of my personality. Now that we get to know each other, hey, I'm not bad! Yeah. Like, going, oh my god, I don't know. He's got a fist bump. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. We'll have to really think on an outro. I think there's going to be a point of contention for the entire podcast. But for this time, I think I'll forego the go fuck yourself, although I'll be thinking it.
I won't say anything, but I'll be thinking as hard as I can.
In my heart, yeah.
In my heart of hearts, just know that I'm telling you to go fuck yourself.
Go fuck yourself. And they could go fuck yourself for every listener of the podcast. But yeah, as usual, guys, thank you for listening.
And go fuck yourself.
No, you don't have to.